Title of this lecture is Clearing Technology. Now, we've had two lectures on clearing methodology, and I have purposely given you a sketchy view rather than a step-by-step view of exactly what piece of paper you put right there in that place, you know, and what piece of paper you put there, and what kind of a pencil you write it with, and exactly what kind of a chair the PC sits in. You would be amazed, and if I seem rather sarcastic, it is because every time I tell somebody what he's supposed to do, it looks like he always turns around and asks me for all the rest of it. You know? You say to somebody, why don't you teach these students? Or why don't you process these pre-clears? Then you always got to know all the little bits and pieces. Well, I'll clue you. An individual who has to have total direction, of course, is being what? Total effect, isn't he? And it is my fond hope that we can get very high causation. A fellow knows a purpose and agrees with it and so forth, he can certainly cause from there on, can't he? All right. Takes a long time for us sometimes to find out exactly what kind of a path it is and which direction it goes and how many paths have to run simultaneously or something like this. We have to have a pattern of some sort or another. But given a workable pattern, certainly there is no substitute for a person being causative toward the creation of the howness. The creation of the bits and pieces and things and stuff is simply an index of his ability to confront that particular post and to confront that purpose, confront his functions, and so forth, right? Now, there's a fairly narrow line to follow, I admit. I also admit it's very easy to get lost. Not difficult to get lost at all. And if you get lost, why, you're in good company. You think of some of the other fellows that have gotten lost trying to walk through, let us say, the technical morass. There have been a lot of fellows gotten lost there. We started adding them up, they'd be the Hall of Fame, that's for sure, wouldn't they? So you'd be in good company, but I think you're above that. I think you're above that. Technically, it has essentially been quite difficult, very difficult, to find the common denominators of the mind and to integrate that knowledge in such a way as to attain a change of state in the mind for all classes of cases. That's been a rough job. People can sneer and say, well, it took years and years and years to do the thing and that sort of thing, but I'd invite their attention to the number of thousands of years when nobody was looking at all. Most people along this line in research have reminded me of somebody trying to walk through Grand Central Station blindfolded on crutches without any feet, who has just had a case of bends, which utterly destroyed his sense of balance because they started in one corner of the place and then somebody touched a little bit and they moved over in some other direction and somebody in the other direction. And finally, when they finally got to another door, they didn't know whether it was the door they went in or the door they came out or whether it was the basement or the attic or what this was all about. And, you know, and there they were standing on the track when the 12 o'clock express came through. Wasn't the place to be. Hamburger. And they certainly made some hamburger. I'm sure there was nothing wrong with the motives and mores of such a person as the head of the Spanish Inquisition. I'm sure he thought he was doing best. I'm sure he did. Very, very sincere man, I'm sure. Although he must have had a rather macabre attitude, since his basic textbook, of which I have seen a copy, I think the name of the book was Hear Them Screaming by Torquemada. It's a bestseller in its day. All the monks read it. The original edition of this was bound in human skin. Do you know that? I'm sure they thought this was for the best, too. But his technologies don't have anything to do with ours. Going total reverse vector. You know, he wasn't very successful. Spanish Inquisition. Wasn't very successful. To show you how unsuccessful was Torquemada and any of that ilk who were seeking to better man by slaughtering him, he had lots of company, you know. He had Hitler and Napoleon and, who was the little man up here that poisoned so many women? Christie. He had lots of good company, all the famous criminals of history. I'm sure they all thought they were working for the best. We won't say for the best for whom, but they were working for the best. And these fellows, they failed. They didn't make it. Now, how do you know they didn't make it? Because their intention was to do a total obliteration. And here you sit, professional auditor, capable of running out the rather easy-to-hammer-at engrams they implanted. Isn't that interesting? Here we are up the track, and somebody's been through it, and we take him through the engram, and that's the end of that experience. You know, that's the end of that recall. So they weren't very good. They weren't very good. They were blunderers. Definitely. I suppose a group of auditors working with an HAS co-audit in France could probably restore that 1 inch that Napoleon is reputed to have taken off the height of all Frenchmen. You know, that was supposed to be his big monument. He reduced the height of all Frenchmen 1 inch by selecting all the tall men for grenadiers and getting them shot first. You know, that's finally what he accomplished. I think we could even undo that one. Now, if we're in a position, like John Wellington Wells, to undo all the magical spells that have been laid in along the line, we should also be in a position to go home a few better in turning it around the other way. And we could. We could. Torquemada was a punk compared to what you could do to somebody. That's factual. Just in casual auditing, do you know that the only thing that can reduce a profile is auditing? We've seen this happen. I've watched it several times. I've been the source of many research experiments of trying to reduce somebody's profile by duress. Getting him tired, drunk, upset, making him pay his income tax, anything else, anything else you could think of by duress. This was done not by directly applying duress, but by finding what duress people had passed through since the last time they were tested. Now, it's a peculiar thing that an ACC student does a resurge 30 days after the course. 30 days after the course, he does a research. So we have to exclude out of these duresses an ACC, our training course, because auditing takes place. But normal human experience, you know, blood, guts, death, sweat, childbirth, all the rest of it, are evidently incapable of reducing a profile. That's a subject of considerable amount of research. I don't think I've ever mentioned before. I never even got out an HCO bid. A lot of cases were looked over. It's fascinating. I mean, this fellow steps under a truck and goes to the hospital and has an operation, and the doctors sit on his face and his back and re-break his legs and shoot him with penicillin, and he's passed through all that. He gets another profile taken. His profile hasn't shifted. You should have a look at this, because it shows that life can't do what you can do. But you can sit down in the auditor's chair, and by ARC breaking the PC, running the processes backwards, failing to duplicate auditing commands, refusing to take up PT problems, making very, very certain that at no time is your PC in a frame of mind to talk to you, all these other little things, and you can reduce a profile. That's pretty interesting, isn't it? You're actually several times bigger than life. You have to look at some of these things and add them up and look them over and say, well, what do you know? We can improve or reduce a profile almost at will. And a good auditor can improve or reduce them at will. That's very, very fascinating. You aren't actually totally in the business of making people better then, because when you flub, you make them worse. I might as well let you in on that one. That doesn't mean that a muzzle co-audit will make them worse. That doesn't mean that auditing is going to upset somebody. But that means squirrel auditing could upset somebody. That means that bad auditing could upset somebody. That means auditing done with the auditor's code thrown out the window could upset somebody. And reduce the profile more than automobile accidents, income tax, or getting married. Factually, you go through a whole war and come out the other end of it without a profile change. You go into an auditing session from a California auditor, something like that, and come out the other end of it, and it's done more to you than the war. Isn't that interesting? We must be dealing with some raw meat here, huh? You should look that over. You were to audit a PC in this fashion. All right, now look around here and find... No, I didn't mean that. What are you looking for? What are you doing? Now, what is it that you just won't tell me and you dare not tell me and can't tell... No, it's all right, I don't want to hear it. Well, let's see. We agreed to have a two-hour session here now. Well, about 20 minutes gone by. I'm tired. Let's end it, huh? Okay. Bust it up. PC says, I've seen this great big picture out in front of it. You say, nonsense. It really doesn't take very much. You don't think possibly auditing like this ever occurs, but it does. It does. Every now and then. All right. Now, that will reduce a profile, but fire, storm, flood, and disaster won't. Well, now, reversely, there have been a lot of actions taken to better man. Been lots of actions taken. There's yogi and yogurt and there's Carnegieism. All kinds of things. Make them all better. Makes them all better, but it doesn't change their profile. You know, it's an odd thing that evidently a psychoanalyst can't even change a person's profile down. They don't, you know. I've had an opportunity of testing them, something the analyst never dared do. It's a very embarrassing thing to suggest validating 19th century psychotherapy. Very, very embarrassing. They've done it. I'm sure they've done it. They've never released any results. No change. Otherwise, why would they publish in all their textbooks that nothing can change the mind? And yet that's published in all those basic textbooks. Must have been a total defeatism. Well, you can change them up and you can change them dime. I can show you how to brainwash somebody and leave him with a total wipeout in 20 seconds. Bang! It takes the Russian 70 days, and all he succeeds in doing then is make somebody mad at him. He doesn't get a total wipeout. He can apply unusual economic or social duresses, such as telling the fellow that if he doesn't confess, why, he's going to burn the family, and he starts in on the youngest child. And he'll get somebody confessing, but that isn't changing anybody's profile or wiping out any memory or doing much of anything else. He did find the Pavlovian trick of making somebody believe he did something that he didn't do. Now, that didn't necessarily change a profile. That didn't change the person's character. That's just one little point where he went goofy. It's very amusing to watch this happen. Actually, not so amusing to the person it's happening to. But you can start in on a gradient scale of conviction with a person and graduate his convictions to get him to totally identify things which he formerly only associated. And the next thing you know, he is apparently around the bend on something. He thinks he did something he didn't do. I'll give you an interesting idea of that. The fellow's in the police station. The police keep saying to him, well, you did hit her on the head. You did hit her on the head. You did hit her on the head. He's scared. He's upset. He's in a semi-hypnotic trance. He's been more or less overwhelmed. And he'll keep saying the truth of the matter. No, he didn't hit her over the head. No, he didn't hit her over the head. And they keep saying, yes, you did hit her over the head. He tries to go to sleep that night, and what if I did hit her over the head? You know? What if I did? They tell him all the next day, well, you hit her over the head. And he says, no, I didn't hit him over the head. You know? They keep going like this. Well, the first thing you know, this guy can believe that he did it. He can get to a point where he believes he did it. This dress. He has a distinct memory of having done it. Quite interesting, isn't it? You can change his mind, make him believe he did things he didn't do, but how different is this of a fellow living a nice, long, prosperous life, kicking the bucket, and then not remembering anything about it at all? That's goofy, too, isn't it? Well, that's many times as goofy as simply thinking you did something you didn't do, one little particular incident. Well, it might make him believe he did things he didn't do, but I assure you, it didn't change his profile. You know what it takes to change a profile? Well, basic method of brainwashing used on the whole track, which you can find out investigating the whole track, was to take a super cold mechanism, some kind or another, super cold, maybe -100, make the patient's face wet and shove it into his face. Because of his agreements on electronics, all of his facsimiles, now extant in front of him, will collapse on the glass. Any reliance he places upon pictures of any kind to tell him what happened will go up in smoke. It'll give him amnesia. Now, you can come along as an auditor, however, and audit out the incident. Find out what he did to the person that did it to him, and a few other things like this. All his memory comes back. In other words, you can knock it out and bring it back. It's a commentary on life that will take you much longer in terms of time in processing to bring his memory back than it did to wipe it out. Much longer. Now, this idea of making people believe things they didn't do. Scientologist knows about engrams. Could do this so much faster than the Russian. It's hardly worth considering. Fact of the matter is, you wouldn't do it. But it's within scientific possibility. You'd stand on top of somebody and hit him, and every time you hit him, you'd tell him exactly what he did. And you keep hitting him and telling him exactly what he did. Very, very short space of time, not days or hours even. He'd believe he did it. This straight overwhelm, making the blow substitute for the act. To avoid the blow, he accepts the act. You turn around and wipe it out again, too. Now, we don't do that sort of thing, but sometimes unintentionally we lower profile simply by being tired or inexpert or something of the sort. Once in a while we goof, you know, pick the thing up the wrong end and spill the ashtray on the floor and kick the pre-clear in the teeth without actually intending to, or he was just ARC breaking rather easily and we were tired that day. We just let him. You know, something of that nature could occur. We are not creatures of violence. That is no particular reason to avoid violence. The only reason to avoid messing people up is because it's stupid. It just doesn't do anything. It has no goal. It accomplishes no end. And anything that's wrong around is because they've been messed up. So, if you want a person or people around you to be less responsible, you'll find that you wind up being totally responsible. That's a good way to go into a dwindling spiral, isn't it? Make everybody totally irresponsible by making them believe they did things they didn't do or that they are things they aren't and putting the pressure on them in all different directions. What's the end product? Well, the end product is that you're guilty of an awful lot of overt acts. You won't have too much success in keeping them that way. You just wind up with a lot of responsibility. There are tremendous practical reasons why people shouldn't go around abusing people. There were two rules about this. One of them was, be able to experience anything and create only those effects that others can experience. Two rules. Interesting rules. Be able yourself to experience anything and create only those effects that others can experience. Very good rules. And you find out life just goes on just like a thread of silk. Works fine. We more or less adhere to that sort of thing. We're trying to be able to experience almost anything that comes along, one fashion or another. And we are very chary in Scientology of handing out things that people are unable to experience. We specialize in things people can experience. So these are kind of golden rules of how you keep it all straight. All right, so much for the preamble on our technology. What is it? Now, if you sharpen up your ear points, I'll give it to you here so fast you won't catch up to it for some time. It's like this. Definition OT, operating Thetan, willing and knowing cause over life, matter, energy, space, and time. Practical statement. OT. Willing and knowing cause over the three universes of the mind, the body, and the physical universe. Ah, how about this other universe, life? But it itself, there is no universal pool called life. Each one is its own universe, to be absolutely technical. Practical definition. Theta clear, willing and knowing cause over Life, matter, energy, space, and time. The workable practical is, of course, theta clear over life, mind, body, physical universe. Theta clear has to be able to create a bank and have it, or uncreate it and not have it. Simple. He doesn't have to go so far as to be able to create a body or not create a body. Now you're up into OT. He doesn't have to go so far as to be able to create matter, energy, space, and time, but he'd certainly not better be in a total effect toward these things. So in order to make theta clear, all you have to do is look at the PC and find out what he's being the effect of and turn it around and have him be causative toward the things of which he is an effect. Auditing formula. Reverse effect, particularly unknowing and unwilling effects, to willing and knowing cause. It's an auditing formula. All right. Now that happens to be the formula of illness, disease, cure of. Happens to be the formula of insanity, cure of. Happens to be the formula of any other thing that is wrong with man, cure of. The person is an unknowing, unwilling effect. All you have to do is turn him around into willing and knowing cause over what he is being the unwilling, unknowing effect of. Just zoop. All right, over here on the right, we have a cause, unknown by the PC. There's a cause of some sort. Causation, outward flowing impulse of something on the note of mystery scale, but an outward flowing impulse about something. Over here on the left, we have the PC. He doesn't know anything about this cause. He doesn't even know it exists. Apparently, can't sense it to listen to him. Yet is kicking his head off every day, but he can't sense it. He doesn't know anything about it. He never heard of it. And he's the total effect of it. All right. Auditing brings the PC from unwilling, unknowing effect to willing and knowing cause toward the button of which he was the unwilling and unknowing effect. Auditing formula. That's all it takes. All right. Now, if it's that simple, all we have to do is discover very briefly and at once and immediately a button. The PC at the target end. Let's discover what's at the causation end. And let's audit the PC so as to put him at the causation end toward the thing that formerly had him as a target. Very simple. Now, there are two methods of doing this. You either find the button amongst all buttons in the case, and by some gradient scale of processes, make the PC arrive at total cause over the thing that totally overwhelmed him and around which his whole case is built. In other words, you find the button amongst all buttons, and the gradient scale is devoted to auditing toward that button till the PC can assume a causative attitude toward it. That's the gradient scale. It's the gradient scale of making him more and more cause toward that button. That's being causative toward him. And the other one is to pick a series of buttons, each one a little more buried and hidden, a little tougher, a little stiffer. And by running a gradient scale of buttons, of which the PC is being an effect, reverse him gradiently toward a light button, a little less light button, get him reversed around as cause to a little less light button, reversed around as cause to a little less light button, reversed around as cause to a little The tough button. And getting reversed around his cause to a button that'll blow his silly head off. See? Gradient scale of choice of buttons, or gradient scale of choice of processes which are going to process the main button. They're both valid routes. Unfortunately, to find the button amongst all buttons on any given case requires a level of assessment and gains a response that are both beyond the reality of the PC. You can do this with some cases. Now let's look at this. The PC is being unwilling, but unknowing, effect of some cause. Oh, your picture. Pick any picture up out of the bank. You've got it. Here's a cannon firing a whiff of grape into the PC's midriff. Cannon at cause, PC at effect. He doesn't want to stand there. He doesn't want to know how it seems. He doesn't want to know anything about it. He doesn't want to feel it. His elsewhereness impulse is terrific. His invisibility impulse is getting hard at work. He is already making plans to screen it. And very shortly, his machinery will have set up innumerable substitutes, such as beautiful blooming roses. Get the position he's in there. All right, he's been overwhelmed. Well, of course, that's not very much overwhelmingness, to tell you the truth, because most thetans survive it, even if their bodies don't. Now, by the way, I want to point out, we have no record of thetans that didn't survive it. So anyhow, you have an individual overwhelmed. All right, now, regardless of what the canon actually is, other thetans or space opera or theta traps or anything of the sort, we do have an overwhelmingness. And all we do is resolve that overwhelmingness. Now, along with it goes the effect scale. Along with it goes the known mystery scale. Along with it goes abnosis. Along with it goes emotional charges. And, oh, there's all sorts of things, tremendous numbers of things, which any trained auditor knows about. These are all side effects of this exact effect of Axiom 10. Now, here's your cause. That is what you basically are trying to get reversed into effect. In other words, the PC begins at total effect of this thing and winds up as causative toward it. Now, you can drop any process when you get the PC onto the emotional scale because he's into the range of knowingness. And he has cognitions, therefore you can change a process when cognitions appear. Although the emotional scale at that point may only be apathy. If you're going the route of tougher and tougher buttons, why bother to pull them all up to the top, to pull them all up into the range of knowingness? Because what's our definition? Willing and knowing cause. Well, he's willing to face it, even though he feels apathetic about it. He has some willingness to face it, and he now knows about it. He has subjective reality on the thing. We've accomplished our goal to that end. We can find something a little bit tougher for him to tackle. Oh, it's not advised that you drop all PCs at that point, but that's the first safe point to drop a PC at. You want to know, well, do you drop a PC when the meter's flat, or do you drop a PC when the PC says it's flat, or so forth? Well, you drop a PC when he is well into the emotional scale and well out of the realm of subscale. That's when you drop a PC. Regardless of whether needles are ringing and pinball machines are clicking and clacking and lighting up, you drop him at the right place. Now, how you establish that, I'm not going to rub in. Now, here, the picture of cause, distance, effect, with a reversal at this point of cause across the distance back to the original cause, which is now effect, is a picture of two-way communication, isn't it? So, of course, by processing in this direction, you also get communication Now, if you process it right, his original causation will be found to be the villain of the piece. Do you ever stop to think how there could ever be anything like a motivator overt act sequence? Now, you notice I've stated that backwards. How could there be a motivator overt act sequence? It would preclude that the Thetan was in the universe, originating his first communication to the universe, before he himself made a contact with it. Impossible. He couldn't have been in the universe unless he contacted it first. So it is an overt act motivator sequence. It's stated in the exact right order. He did something to everything which thereafter could hurt him, because the intention to hurt or be hurt is inherent to any bad consequence. Now that intention then sets the individual up. He has to decide that something of this class of being, one, he can communicate with it, and two, he can hurt it. Now he has to decide then that that class of being, or in this circumstances, a difficulty or consequence can occur. And if a consequence can occur out of this action, then that consequence exists, and it has been manifested by whom? The Thetan himself. He's the boy that decided things could be hurt. And because he intended to injure, maim, upset, derange something else, he decided that injury, maimery, could exist and occur. This is what he decided. And that is the opening of the lid of Pandora's box. Now, after that, communication gets all mixed up with this. See? Just plain communication can result in some sort of a flinch or pain. Everything can get identified, and particularly with communication. Because obviously the individual communicated with something and it got hurt. And after a while, the communication of something always carries with it the small thought that it might hurt it. Now, going into this philosophically, we discover there must be a point where a Thetan decided that his postulates could be messed up. Otherwise, nothing would ever come back and hit him in the teeth that he didn't intend to have hit him in the teeth. He must have made a decision these postulates could be messed up. Therefore, somewhere along in this echelon, the individual had to decide that there was an other determinism that he could not invade the privacy of, and that had a right to mess up his postulates. He had to decide all these things. Now, out of this basic theory, the invasion of privacy, communication, overt act motivator sequence, all added up to the thing of called bad intention. You know, communication can't mess anybody up unless there's some bad intention with it. And along in this echelon, you find the highest level processes. Now, there, right at the beginning of track, see, right there, there's only one process that goes ahead of it. And unfortunately, PCs can't, to a large extent, run it. And that process is the decision to not know. You run this in terms of recall something you wouldn't mind forgetting. Or think of something you wouldn't mind forgetting, or some such process as that. That's a very low process. Works to some degree. You run into cases that they mind forgetting everything. I mean, they mind forgetting anything. They can't do without it. And they're in obsessions and so on. You run across a lot of bad curves when you try to run this. And the idea of not know. You know, look around here and find something you could not know, or something like that. The old not-know processes. These are right straight into the teeth of your not-is processes, you see. And they fit up above this line. Individual had to not know before he could decide no. That's known as the first and second postulate. First postulate, native state, potentiality of knowing anything and everything anyplace. Next step, decision to not know. Next step, decision to know something. So you get what we call the first and second postulate. First postulate is always not know. This is followed by the third postulate, forget, which is followed by the fourth postulate, remember. So people sitting around remembering, can't do this forever as a process, actually, because it's the fourth postulate, which is a harmonic on this second postulate. Now, all second postulates depend for their power on the first postulate. You get this. The first postulate is order. The second postulate is confusion. Everybody thought it was reverse-wise. It's not. First postulate's order. The second postulate's confusion. Every time you try to put order into something, you skid. And this postulate skid from the first to the second one, you watch all the time in life and in PCs and so on. You try to put in the first postulate, and the PC or life skids to the second. You notice this. A person had to have the idea he was well before he could get the idea he was sick. So you can say to somebody, "How well you look today." And they say, "I don't feel very well." And up to that moment, they felt fine. You say, "How well you look today." That's enough, you know. You can say to somebody any desirable thing, and you're liable to have them skid into an undesirable thing. They down-curve obsessively. They're doing this first, second postulate skid. Well, below that level is a system of knowingness known as communication, which has to decide that somebody or something else knows, and you don't. And that this other person knows something you don't know. Now, there's a very, very high circumstance or condition in terms of causative postulates and situations which went about making up this universe. Education at large is premised on the thing that the student is stupid and has to be taught something. That's kind of wild and wonderful if you think it over. Because it leaves the educator always invading stupidity. Right? We don't do that in Scientology. Only because we educate the right way do we educate at all. Otherwise, we wouldn't bother. You get the idea? We educate on the assumption that you know. You just need a little re-stimulation. Our end goal is your increased brightness. Not an overwhelmingness with data to bring about a stupidity. Accidentally, wherever we overwhelm somebody just with data and overwhelm them, and never bail them out, we're always sorry for it because sooner or later we have to pick them up by the scruff of the neck and dig them out of it and set them going again. Well, communication easily associates itself with overt act motivator sequences. You see, communication isn't an overt act motivator sequence, but it easily identifies with them. So as a person is more and more convinced that he is bad cause, the less he communicates or the less his communication is controlled or channeled. Therefore, your ARC triangle, where C monitors the state of the case. Now, your C, of course, starts going off the rails to the degree that the individual will not do willing and knowing communication because he's got causation and overt act motivator sequences all mixed up with talking to somebody. And he knows what would happen if he started talking to Mr. Joe Blow. Why, Joe Blow would spit in half. That's what happened, obviously. If he really started talking to him, He, A. Thetan, knows that his communication lines are pure poison. Well, therefore, he communicates on a lot of vias, and he protects people and all sorts of things. Now, what's this conviction of bad cause? The individual is convinced that he's bad cause. Therefore, he won't be causative. But there are ways to get the causations which have resulted in his belief of bad cause out of the road. And there are many ways of doing this. Overt act, withhold. Overt, withhold, straight wire, selected person is the classic. That thing is the most. That's right on the button. Now you're just turning him around from being total effect towards something to being total cause by something. All right? And that's where the individual actually starts in actual auditing, when he gets in to a co-audit. Overt act, withhold, straight wire, selected person. Instructor goes around and finds a person. Now, he's running this gradient scale of buttons. What he's doing, he's picking terminals that are real to the PC, or not too unreal to him. Somebody the PC has some idea exists. And he picks the terminal by an assessment with an E-meter, and he sets up the co-audit team to run overt, withhold, straight wire on this selected person. And if the auditor can't find it in something like 30 seconds or a minute and a half, at the absolute maximum, you see, if he can't find it within this very finite space of time, you know, just, whom do you pity, or whom have you forgotten, or whom do you blame for all of your difficulties in life? That is the standard question that is used in co-audit. Who do you blame for all your difficulties in life, huh?
No, I blame us all. Well, that's good.
You say, that's what you run. You turn around and you say, that's what you run. God, that's it. Go on to the next one. The fellow says, life. I don't blame that. You say, good. Now, thank you very much. And you tell the muzzled auditor, in this case, run yourself. There's a button. And the auditing command then evolves. Recall something you have done to selected person. Recall something you have withheld from selected person, just as an alternate, one after the other. And if you didn't find it, in a very short space of time, you put yourself in there. You see, you said yourself. Now, there are enough pro rules with regard to these processes to absolutely stagger a beginning co-auditor. So you just take those out of his zone of responsibility. You established it, and you found a gradient button that the case could be approached on in order to start this reversal toward being causative. You got that button rolling. That was all you wanted to do. Now, your next swing around as soon as those buttons appear to be flat. And the E-meter and the PC should have some agreement between them. As soon as this is more or less adjudicated flat, you can pick up the next button. You'll find out there are more buttons available now. But look, try not to go too steep in a co-audit. Just pick out somebody else that has shown up and run that person. You got the idea? You're not too steep. Now, this evidently maps out, technologically, this evidently maps out a gradient scale which is going to arrive at the button amongst all buttons, but not in co-audit. Co-audit's stuck with this life. And when he's run everybody, including his grandmother and his dog, he's got them all flat. This lifetime's all clear. Everybody's jumping around you saying, well, come on now, give us something, some real meat, you know, and we can run this. We're perfectly able to run this and so forth. Why, that's it. They've had it. That's co-audit. The end. This lifetime all cleaned up. Now you can classify this person as a release. You say you're released? Good, you made it. Thanks. Congratulating. Someday, who knows, you may be lucky enough to go on to clear. Of course, you say, where? You've got him on the ladder. He's got an idea there's a place to go, that's for sure. But the assessment all by itself, the assessment on this case now is going to occupy 15, 20 minutes, an hour maybe. You're going to have to punch around, look it over very carefully. It's a professional job to a large degree from there on. You'll find the case more markedly open, and it isn't as hard to do as starting it out from scratch by one awful long ways. But this is what you should do when they finish a co-audit, just to speak technologically. You should now start a steep gradient of buttons. You know, going from the idea of a button the size of the ashtray to a button the size of the Woolworth building to a button the size of a planetary system, skipping a planet, a button the size of an island of galaxies or an island universe or something like that. Let's get these buttons graduated up just as steep as we can graduate them. And we're going to have to start in on buttons that exist elsewhere and in other lives and all that sort of things. So we're going to have to adapt the process to another auditing form. Guess at something you have done to button. Guess at something you have withheld from button. Oh yeah, you find out their life hasn't been all precise. Most of the time they were just guessing what they had done. They didn't know for sure at all. As a matter of fact, usually collapse the other terminal on them to find out what they had done. Mostly guesswork. So you run it at guess. Now, when you've kind of got buttons out of the road, and you've got this steep gradient out of the road, your next overt act against the PC is to just do a standard engram location and overt with whole straight wire on engrams on a gradient scale until you got the rock. You got safe clear. That's all there is to it. What you do is sort out an engram. You find all the people present in the engram necessary to resolve the case. You find that in your E-meter. All the people present in the engram necessary to resolve the case. Let's count them all up and include the donkey. The donkey and the priest and the hangman. Include everybody that you can find there that had anything to do with this whatsoever. And then you just make a little list of them, and now you just run over it with whole straight wire until they're kind of flat, but you run it with guess. You see, guess what you've done to. And if they know their name, all right. If they don't, it's just a hangman. Why, it's the hangman. And they move right out of that motivator back into the overt. And the overt kind of polishes off and dusts up, and that's about it. And you find the next engram necessary to resolve the case, and you find that they'll move into that as total motivator. You run over it with whole straight wire, and it becomes more and more... moves over into the overt side of the thing, and they realize it was an overt act by themselves after all. And they get into that companion engram. You pick up the next engram necessary to resolve the case. You do the same thing with this. Somewhere along the line, you're going to run into the rock. And you're going to sort out everybody and everything connected with this rock. And then you're going to run everything overt withhold that you can find in the incident. Now, you may start that a little earlier. So you're just going to run pieces of gravel and sky and space and other things like that, because he's ready to run it now. You just find everything there is in that incident and you go for broke. Well, that's the road to clear. And that's the way she is plotted. If you had to do all the original slug work of cleaning up all the misapprehensions and stupidities of this lifetime, you'd pretty well had it. Now, I suppose you want to know how to go on to OT from there. That's very simple. Just run overt withhold on the gradient of thetans, minds, bodies, and universes, parts of. And you've got from there on up to OT. Okay? You've had it? Thank you.